Good day, and welcome to episode 14 of the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. I'm James Gordon, and I'm part of the team behind a weekly community gathering focused on raising awareness and sharing ideas about important issues that concern residents of Guelph and beyond. This week we're talking about an issue that has been very controversial in Guelph of late, Metrolinx, the arm's-length provincial corporation that runs our GO train service. It's planning road closures in our downtown core and even park expropriation as they seek to expand their service. We were pleased to have Hamilton MP Matthew Green on the call, speaking to his experience with Metrolinx and Toronto Transit advocate Rick Cicciarelli. Quite a few Guelph-concerned citizens joined in too, as you'll hear, as did City Councillors Phil Ault and yours truly. Dustin Brown was our moderator. We'll start with MP Green with apologies that we missed the beginning of his presentation with a techno glitch. Here's Matthew.
You know, my feedback to you would be to ensure that you have clear community communications and commitments that are more ironclad than what we had in order to have the outcomes that you're going to be sold and that which likely you would purport to sell to your community. I sold my community on the benefits of LRT, which 6 years, 7 years later have still yet to be delivered. So I hope that that's a good overview. I'm happy to answer any questions to the best of my ability and get into whatever specifics people think might be valuable.
Fantastic. Thank you, Matthew. So that's a good overview of what's going on in Hamilton. I want to make sure that everybody's on the same page in this call, though, in terms of understanding what is going on in Guelph up to this point. I'll pass things over to Phil first, and maybe you can help us contextualize that, as well as talk about the experience that you heard from Councillor Josh Matlow in Toronto as well.
Thanks very much, Matt. That's truly appreciated. There are a number of issues that you raised that, despite the fact that there isn't a direct parallel, are extremely important. The cavalier, the disdainful attitude of Metrolinx, I think has been something that has been problematic for people. And that extends from street closures to proposals for establishing hydro power generators, literally in city parks. There are a couple of significant factors that I think are worth considering. The point that you raise about the difficulty of dealing with Metrolinx across the table is something I heard from Toronto Councillor Josh Matlow as well. I talked to him about the experience with the Eglinton Crosstown LRT, and he was saying that the real frustration, real anger actually, that was experienced on that particular issue came from local businesses who were quite literally being themselves being pushed out of a neighborhood that they had been in. In our case, the real issue is the closure of streets along a line without really any significant prior warning. And one of the concerns that I have that I want to ask you about is one of tactics. What are some of the tools that community groups can use? Can things like freedom of information be used, for example? And further, what are the risks that we might have from something that I think you're quite familiar with, ministerial zoning orders coming into play that would allow for developers, to my mind, the one that comes to play in Guelph is Skyline, receiving a ministerial zoning order to get around the planning requirements of where the city ruled against a 25-story development downtown. These, I think, are two or three different concerns, and it's the tactics that I don't think we yet have. So I'm hoping we can borrow from some of your experience, and no disrespect, I think some of your failures as well. So if you could comment on some of that, that would be great.
Yeah, no, I mean, I learn from my failures every day. And so I'm happy to share that. And I come from a pretty gritty town. Like we're pretty elbows up down here. So we, you know, we fight pretty hard and dig in pretty hard when we believe in what we're doing is right. So, you know, I'll share with you that the nebulous zone of an arm's length agency like Metrolinx provides a tremendous amount of political cover for developers, for the province, and for pro-development municipalities or municipal civic leaders. And, you know, this premier is the most developer-friendly premier, perhaps in five or six generations of premiers. I'm unclear. You know, I can say at least under the Liberals, they had a process for protecting the Greenbelt. They had a process for, you know, what was supposed to be enhanced municipal inputs. That will not be the case under this province, mark my words. The information from Metrolinx to ministries will be a bit of a black hole. The delays to get that information will be a black hole. But in my world of organizing and activism, I abide by the principle of controlling the controllables. The controllable that you have is your ability to access information. And I don't even know who's on the call. So if you're on the call, consider this an open source, open comment. You can quote me anywhere. But if the province is dragging their feet on providing information to the public, then the public has, and particularly civic councillors, have a responsibility or an opportunity at least to get that information directly from their own municipalities. Because there is going to be years, if not like definitely months, if not years, of early correspondence between your director of transportation, your chief planning officer, your GM, your mayor, any, you know, overly development friendly counselors. How do you find them? Just take a look at the donations, right? Like it's very clear where they are. So, you know, like some of these folks have never seen a development they didn't like, regardless of what the built form is or what the community, you know, identity is. They will push through this stuff in ways that are, you know, without any kind of account. So FOIs are a really important thing. Getting clear about the questions that you have to ask staff to get on the record, making sure that you have delegations. Our organizing included significant resident delegations to council to dig into the details and to mobilize people who are in the know on these specific things. One of the beautiful things about being in a university town or being in a beautiful city like Guelph is you're going to have a whole generation of academics, experts, retired professionals who can help do some research for you in ways that you can't do on your own. Planning, zoning experts, lawyers, people that are living their retirement in Guelph will be able to provide like just a treasure trove of experience. FOI everybody, you know? And I think like that's an important thing because there ought to be transparency in these deals. Find out what the land acquisitions are adjacent to the deals in the last 5 years. How are they connected? And I'm not like talking conspiracy theories here. I wish that were the case, but the reality is there is no other level of government, and mark my words, there is no other level of government that can make money for private businesses at the stroke of a pen like municipalities can. Like they turn agriculture into residential land. They can turn, you know, single family units into 40-story buildings at the stroke of a pen. So that's, you know, that would be my suggestion is like the more information you can get your hands on, the better. The more conversations like this, the better. You know, figure out what are your sticking points. Because again, like I'm saying this on the backdrop of the fact that I am pro transit. I am pro transition from a carbon economy. Like I am that. And so they've muddied it by putting in a bunch of people who are on Metrolinx. And if I'm not mistaken, the current iteration will have been probably a conservative slate, because all of the liberals would have been probably purged by now. But you'll find people in senior leaderships who have had senior leaderships in other projects around the world that have also been failures. Scotland comes to mind. You can connect the dots on that, but it's a bit of a rabbit hole when you find out like who's actually on the Metrolinx board, who's on the senior leadership, where do they come from, and what was their experiences in this work?
Great. So I want to get to, I think a few of the recommendations that you just made, Matthew, have been acted upon already, you know, following the money, seeing who's getting donations from who, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to hear from some of the Guelph locals who have been following this issue closely. I'm going to go through some questions that were laid out in the chat, just in the order that they came up. And then if anybody who has particular knowledge of what's going on in Guelph can answer them, then please feel free to pipe up if you have definitive knowledge. So the first one was from Alex Smith, and it was, what is the state of communications at City Hall? If the engineering department knew about the Metrolinx proposal to build a hydro substation in Margaret Green Park for months and did not advise the Parks Department or council members. I know a few people have been really looking at this. I'll say what I know, which is pretty preliminary, which is there's a property close to Margaret Green Park who's owned by some donor to some person on council. And for some reason, they weren't approached. That private property was not approached to have the substation. But there was a presumption somewhere within this process that the substation was okay to go into public parkland without any community consultation. I know that's what sparked a lot of the resistance that we've seen so far from the community. Does anybody have anything else to say on that?
If I could, Dustin, it's Matthew, it's James here. I'm a Guelph City Councillor. Related to Alex's question, it's always been very concerning to me that early on in the debate, when it got divisive, the city's claim was that, well, we hear you, but we can't do anything about it because Metrolinx trumps with our rail laws. They trump what a municipality can do. A lot of people on this call, I think, have already presumed that that can't be the case. And yet, I think those of us who would like to get that story straight are still unclear about what we can and we cannot do. And I wonder if you can comment on that.
Well, that's a really interesting question, Councillor, because 500 meters from my house, we have CN Rail, and the Rail Act is a federal jurisdiction, which has like a federal responsibility that does supersede municipalities. So there's definitely some truth to that, that municipalities, you know, are hampered by the extra jurisdictional aspects of rail. That is true. And so what that also does, though, is provide another lever with whomever you have locally at the federal level, because it's not simply a Doug Ford, you know, black hole that you now have within that Rail Act, a federal responsibility that, quite frankly, you know, you'd want to have some folks looking at whoever your local MP is, and I don't know who that is, and engaging them in a very real way about what they're doing to address that federal issue. Right. And I'll say something else, and I'm very jaundiced about municipal politics. So this might sound way off the deep end, but I'm going to go ahead and put it out there anyways. Sometimes in these types of deals, there are red herrings. And sometimes a red herring looks like, we're going to say that we're going to put this thing in a public park. So it's the public's idea that we actually expropriate this private property at 3x market value to end up there as seeming like a reasonable compromise. These are not new games. You know, I can think of more than a few examples where there's been like really, really, really suspicious expropriations of city council friendly properties, which means people who own properties that are close to specific councillors, at rates that are way beyond what a reasonable market acquisition would look like. So just be aware of like all those properties in those areas and who they're connected to and what that looks like, because you know, you may actually be playing in a bigger game of like, yeah, the end game is that it does end up on a private property and that the city's going to be on the hook now, or whoever would be on the hook for a significant amount of money. I know it sounds conspiratorial, but corruption at city council, not just the like the elected officials, but you know, in the staff, developers, engineers, all that stuff is a real thing. It's a very real thing. Just watch or read Mayor's Gone Bad if you want to get a context of Canadian corruption in cities.
Phil, you wanted to jump in and comment on that.
Yeah, just give me a couple seconds. First of all, I wanted to introduce Rick from Toronto. Excuse me. And hope that maybe he can provide us with some perspective on the experiences within the Eglinton corridor, perhaps in about 5 minutes or so. But I wanted to deal with the hydro substation and the drop down. And Matt, I think I talked to you, but I certainly talked to Josh Matlow about this. The hydro substation that is necessary for the electrification of GO is something that you would think logically could go below the Ontario Hydro or the Power One right of way that exists running perpendicular to the line at Silver Creek or at the Hanlon. As it turns out, Ontario Hydro has to give permission for that and has not communicated at all with Metrolinx. It's not the developer and the and Metrolinx that are the issue. The issue is that you have a very large corporation, Hydro One, and another very large corporation, Metrolinx, that are not communicating. And Matt, was it you that was talking about that to me earlier, or was that Josh? I can't remember. Maybe Rick even has some input on that one. Hydro One just acts in a very cavalier fashion, was really the understanding that I had. They're not interested in dealing with Metrolinx or anyone else.
Yeah, that's the product of the privatization of hydro, right? Like there's no accountability. Once it's gone. And again, the reason why I'm so jaundiced about P3s is for that very reason. We couldn't even get them to cut overhanging trees on the corridor, so or to pick up garbage on the corridor, do any of the little things that a good neighbor would do in a municipality. So yeah, no, I could see that being quite a black hole as well. But I think it's definitely worth, as councillors, like really fighting to have these people come before council. At some point in time, hydro's got to come before council for something. And, you know, like I would be leaning on your general manager to demand that the head of Metrolinx comes, the head of hydro comes, put those demands out there. Early to have them delegate before council to ask them questions on the record about this stuff. Whether they do or they don't is, you know, another question, but I think starting to put that public pressure on them to be accountable to the public.
Rick from Toronto, I'm wondering if you might have any input on that. Before I go, I just want to fill in on the role of Mike Schreiner, the MPP, on this as well. I have been in communications with Mike, and he has been of some assistance on clarifying some points for me about what's going on in the line. We have not necessarily used his office as well as we should. But Rick, if you have any input on your experiences or the experiences of Toronto in dealing with the LRT, that would be really invaluable for people to hear what worked, what didn't work, and what lessons you might have for dealing with Metrolinx.
Hi, thank you. Just a bit of background. I've dealt with Metrolinx and GO as part of the Clean Train Coalition as well about 10 years ago, where we were pushing the provincial government to electrify the Up Express when they were planning Up Express. And that evolved into the regional electrification program. I've also been involved as a community organizer in the formation, the establishment of the Toronto Community Benefits Network. And certainly a lot of what Matthew has shared has typified the kind of struggle that communities go through in trying to deal with large regional agencies that are planning transit and affecting local neighborhoods. I think I'd like to kind of skip my experiences on the LRT because I think you're dealing with a different creature. GO is a separate, almost a corporation within a corporation at Metrolinx, and has a history that is much more related to the train world than to the transit world. In terms of the way that people have addressed it, around their planning, around their operations of it, and around their decision making. So, when Matthew talks about let's open this up and take a look at how the feds could be involved, I think that's a good channel to consider. When you talk about how can the city be involved, I think that's a good channel to consider. But take the fight to them. Metrolinx has a board meeting coming up in November. Get on their agenda. Bring Phil Verster out to Guelph. Walk him around. Tell him that this isn't surplus property, this is a public park. Show them alternative sites that could be used. There's land that I see on Google beside Costco. I don't know if anybody's considered that, but take a look at alternative sites. Be propositional. The idea of taking a look at hydro as a target. Figure out who your allies are to get to hydro, to put pressure on them. Figure out who the decision makers are and put their profiles in public so that they have to answer questions of the media. The more that you make this a transparent decision-making process, the quicker that people start to listen to you as part of the decision-making process. Because if it's not transparent, if it's done like Matthew is saying, it's really, you know, a bit of a shell game so that they can justify paying extraordinary amounts for pieces of land that somebody's brother who has relations to somebody else owns and is going to profit from. I think you should know these things. So figure out who the people are all the way from the top down to the real estate company that's been hired to do the alternatives, to present people with alternatives. These people are reachable, and you need to be building allies as well that can help you reach the ones that aren't so reachable. Hydro has never been much of a public corporation. It's pretty well shielded. But the Ministry of Transportation, Carolyn Mulrooney, is a public official. Get her into your neighborhood. And Phil Verster is a public official. Get him into your neighborhood. That's my best advice.
Thanks very much, Rick. Dustin, over to you.
All right. I'm just going to keep on going to the questions in the chat, and maybe we can flesh out more of what's going on to get everybody on the same page and same awareness. I think the next thing to move on is probably the Dublin Street closure, which, as I understand it, is soon to be the closure of many more streets if Metrolinx gets their way. I'll invite people more knowledgeable than me to speak on it, but I know the gist of it. Is, you know, Dublin Street is now closed at the railway at close to the intersection of Dublin and Kent. Kent has been converted into one-way little corridor to redirect traffic over to Glasgow. And that includes not just car traffic, but also active transport on bikes, feet, rollerblades, what have you. I know that's caused quite a few disturbances to that neighborhood. I wonder if one of the neighbors of that closure there would have something to say on that, and any of the correspondence they've had with the city trying to figure out that issue. I'm thinking of Susan in particular, if you want to speak on that, Susan.
So the level grade crossing regulations were updated in 2014, and we have to be compliant by 2021. And my view is that Metrolinx is using these as cover to close down a number of crossings because their agenda is to increase train speed along the corridor. So I think we also have to ask questions to Lloyd Longfield. I have to imagine that this is causing a nightmare in cities across the country, like Halifax or Montreal or Vancouver, where there's wonky little crossings that don't meet the regulations. So one question I would have is if there's any opportunity for grandfathering existing crossings. I'm also wondering why there was no municipal class environmental assessment for the closure of Dublin, 165-year-old or 85-year-old, I think, thoroughfare, whereas we have this massive EA, municipal EA for the widening of Gordon Street. One of the criteria that Kent and Dublin don't comply with for the grade level crossings is that the intersection of Dublin and Kent is within 30 meters of the track. That exact same situation exists at Glasgow and Kent. So by reading the grade level crossing manual, or that the reason that staff said that crossing had to be closed, the exact same conditions exist at Glasgow. So they could tell us today that that's slated to close. And my same question is, what is the plan? Like, where is the big picture? I'm really encouraging people to delegate to council on Monday the impact of the quote vegetation removal plan is really just starting to sink in for me, thanks to an email from Sandy. Your mind just keeps rippling on the impacts. But in particular, there are massive, huge maples in Waterloo Park, which are right against the retaining wall of the tracks. And according to Metrolinx's management plan, like 6 or 7 of them are gonna come down, like half the trees in the park. So staff really, like, I wanna see a motion on Monday night for forestry staff to really dig into that vegetation removal plan and to look at what the implications are going to be for downtown Guelph. And on that Kent Street corridor in particular, I guess I'm still advocating or wondering if that can be a section of the track, like Georgetown to Brampton, which is not going to be electrified, because the entire track is not going to be electrified. There's going to be hybrid engines, but there really is going to be a tremendous impact on heritage, on, you know, this very sensitive area right in the center of the city if the electrification goes ahead. So I could talk all morning, but other people will want to give input. It's a huge topic. And I'm also happy to answer any other questions. The last thing I will say is Metrolinx's own traffic study recommended keeping the Dublin Street crossing open to active transportation for cyclists and pedestrians and wheelchairs to maintain connectivity. So why didn't that happen? And why didn't that get debated at city council? The way it was handled by our own city council, that there was no public consultation, it didn't even go to committee of the whole or council for open public debate. So that's on our mayor for taking it directly from a staff report to rubber stamping of the bylaw. That was shockingly undemocratic and unacceptable. And so it's not all on Metrolinx. Their public consultation has been abysmal, but so was the city's. And we need our staff and council to start advocating for our interests. There's my piece.
Thank you, Susan. So I'll leave the floor open in case anybody has something to add to that.
Just a quick point. In Toronto, on the LRT projects, the city has a master agreement with Metrolinx, which covers things that would include property around the edges that projects would need that might be city property, and budget from the projects that would go into things like treescaping or public works that the project needs, which are under the city's control. So you might want to start to dig into who in your municipality is dealing with Metrolinx, get to know them, because the bureaucrats, again, real estate tends to be a very private, behind closed doors type of arrangement. And as long as they know that the spotlight is on them, they have to stay clean.
Dustin, before you get to Alex, Rick, do you have access to, and could you send me that agreement? I'll confess that I do not know what the nature of our agreement with Metrolinx is, if it even exists. But I think that that's a fairly important first step for us to understand what that agreement might be, so that we can then proceed from there to address some of the issues that can be contained, everything from trees to parks and right-of-ways. That would really be appreciated. And I can certainly get you my email through Josh's office if that would help.
Okay, so Alex Smith, you wanted to jump in with a comment.
Yeah, thanks very much. I just wanted to make two quick comments. First of all, I just don't understand why this whole issue hasn't taken a higher profile at City Council. And I don't, specifically with respect to Dublin Street, I don't understand why the city would pass a bylaw facilitating the closing of Dublin Street without getting a commitment from Metrolinx as to what they want to do with the other level crossings. Because it seems to me we're going to have a situation where bing, 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 they close all the other level crossings. And then they say, oh, gee, this is untenable. There's so much traffic on Edinburgh. We're going to have to tunnel Edinburgh. So we're going to have to close it down for 2 years. I just see traffic chaos coming. And I don't understand why the city would do this, do Dublin as a one-off. It seems to me it's a very unsophisticated approach. Which brings me to my second point, which is certainly the mayor seems to throw his hands up and say, well, it's the Railway Act. There's nothing we can do about it. Well, first of all, you know, it's legislation. You know, we should be talking to the feds about the Railway Act and the implications, and talking to Lloyd, who's, you know, fairly responsive to public pressure, local public pressure. But more significantly, it is a provincial crown corporation that's using the Railway Act. So, you know, that's the province's thing. So, you know, they may say this is federal legislation, but it's a provincial crown corporation that's doing this to us. And thirdly, even if the legal avenues are limited, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily true, public pressure is a huge thing. And yet if we sort of leave this issue on the back burner with no public debate, there'll be no public pressure, and Metrolinx will get to do whatever they want. Thanks very much.
Great, thank you, Alex. I will say it's encouraging to see so many people who are highly engaged in this. I just want to note for everybody who didn't see that Matthew Green had to leave, unfortunately, to take his son to school, and he wished us luck with our community organizing, which looks like we're going to continue to do. Phil, over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just wanted to respond somewhat to Alex and both to Rick and to Matt on jurisdictions. Alex, I think it is really important for us to engage Lloyd Longfield on this. And I want to give my experiences with Lloyd on that, because I have a lot of respect for Lloyd. I think he's quite a good community person. But on when we were dealing with the Edinburgh CN crossing, he was a bugger to move on that. I'll be quite honest. And partially it's because I think that he was encouraged to step down on that. It was during an election. Mark Garneau, the Minister of Transportation, got involved in that, and very little to almost zero happened on that. So I think on this particular issue, anybody that has any close connections with Lloyd Longfield truly does need to be persistent on this. But it is imperative that we do keep him engaged because of the authority that the Railways Acts carry on this particular project. Rick, have you got any comments on using MPs to get action on this? I've been tremendously frustrated because of the power of the Railway Acts on any dealings that I've had on anything similar to this.
In terms of the experience we had with the Clean Train Coalition, having a nonpartisan approach that involved political representatives from both the opposition and the governing party was helpful. And I think that, again, your central focus needs to be the province, but putting pressure from other levels helps. Mulroney is the minister, get to her office. The province is potentially going into an election next year. Look for people that can influence on both sides of the party line, and create this as an election issue. I think the sense that you need to escalate this as quickly as you can is there. The province and Metrolinx wants to deliver regional express rail, electrified regional express rail, as one of the things that it's been responsible to carry. And it's got delivery dates in Metrolinx's plan. So if you can leverage those and keep putting the pressure on, saying that if you want to meet your delivery dates, if you want to meet your performance targets, if you guys want to get your performance bonuses at Christmas, you need to be a little more in alignment with where the community's at and not do stupid things like put transformer stations in public parks.
Let me just ask you one more question, Rick. And it comes from some of the concerns of Alex and Susan with regards to municipal council. In your experience, where was the greatest success with pressure being brought to bear? At the federal, provincial, or the municipal level, or was it an amalgam? How much authority do municipalities have when it comes to issues associated with property controlled by the railways, whether it's CN, Metrolinx, whatever? Well, what's your gut feeling on that one?
Again, I differentiate between the transit and the railway, and the transit system and the railway system. With the Eglinton Crosstown and Finch LRT that I was involved in, very much the city had an active leverage in that. With the Go Rail corridor, when we were talking electrification, I had to work, or we had to work through putting a coalition of neighborhoods right along the corridor together and pressure the provincial representatives along the corridor. It certainly helped to have city involvement, but it was a different kettle. It really was focused at the provincial level with GO and Metrolinx as the and in that order, GO first and then Metrolinx as the planning agency as the pressure points.
Yeah, well, I certainly appreciate you stating that we should work to get on an agenda of Metrolinx and to invite Carolyn Mulroney to attend. Whether Mulroney attends or not is immaterial. The real issue there is that we are extending the invitation, and equally we should have people beyond, for those of you that don't know, the very low level public relations staff that we had in Guelph about a month ago addressing the sub generator. What I'm hearing you say, Rick, is that we need to go to the top and start there.
The minister's office has policy and strategic communications people. Make this one of their agenda items at their daily meetings.
Okay, I think one thing to be asked is, you know, we have a lot of like-minded people on this call, a lot of people who share a purpose around this issue. Where are the common meeting places after this call for people to go to? Are there Facebook groups, email threads, anything else? Could people from this call be added to those? Is anybody in charge of those? Or does that need to be created?
I think just to offer, I think it probably does need to be created. The residence group with which Susan Watson, and I think Diane are perhaps associated with, might be a good start. But I think because this is a broader issue than a singular neighborhood, I'm hearing from Rick that there was a real need to essentially broaden the coalition to virtually everybody in Guelph who is affected by Guelph. So it might require some sort of an interest group. Perhaps the OPERG could be of assistance, but clearly it will need people to be the organizers and the front people. I think fairly quickly, if I understand what Rick is saying, because if it's not done soon, then whatever Metrolinx conceives, and I agree with Susan, the other crossings are going to be closed, will occur in due process.
I would just speak to that if I can. So the Guelph Old City Residents Committee, we struck a Metrolinx working committee. We haven't really got that rolling after, you know, since the summer. So that really needs to be activated. There's the Margaret Green group, and then also Ward 1 has been getting active because that's going to impact the footbridge, the 100-step bridge there. And then if you look at the vegetation removal plan, that's going to have impacts right through the city. But I think we do need more kind of overarching connectivity between all of those groups. Mike Schreiner has been super helpful. He convened a meeting in the summer. So a number of people who had approached him, he had a meeting and brought us all together. But I think we've been forming. Now it's time to start storming.
I just wanted to mention one item where there would be an immediate benefit to having some volunteers to help out with, and that is I live along the tracks between Glasgow and Yorkshire, and getting Susan mentioned earlier in the call about the mature maples at the park, I think quite near to Norfolk. My neighbor and I took a walk. He's a surveyor and he had the survey in hand along the rail line. And his recommendation was to inventory every tree that's in the vicinity and essentially have that as a data set for the public record. So I would love to get the help of anyone knowledgeable or not so knowledgeable about trees in that to just help out with getting the inventory done. And I would say the sort of most immediate area would be from Norfolk out to Edinburgh.
Does the university have anyone who would be able to get involved?
Potentially. I mean, we have an arboretum, Sean Fox, potentially. I also have a friend who's an arborist with a private company.
Why wouldn't our city forestry staff do that for us?
Like, you know what?
Given that we just mapped our tree canopy, is it not possible that that information is already in existence?
Or if it's not, like, I think there needs to be a motion at City Council when the Urban Forestry Management Plan is coming to Council this Monday night. The deadline to register is 10 a.m. tomorrow. We need, staff needs a mandate from Council to take Metrolinx's vegetation removal plan and to inventory exactly the impact that's going to have on our urban canopy. And then we need to be advocating for where it can be preserved in sensitive areas that maybe need to be skipped for the electrification. Like, that needs to happen toot sweet. And for Margaret Green Park as well. That's going to be a chainsaw massacre as well. So we're already paying tax dollars for those staff. They need to start working for us. There's a level that I resent that it falls on citizens to do work that we are paying staff to do for us.
Phil, what is that? Is that a motion that you could see fit to carry forward?
So we need Phil or James or one of our counselors to bring forward that motion on Monday night.
If Sandy, if you or Susan could frame something like that, there has been some tree inventory work that has been done in Margaret Green Park, but we will certainly need to have something going forward that we can attach to the meeting. Now I will caution you on this one, that the mayor is very selective on motions like this. If he considers them to be in order in relationship to the discussion, and he does that arbitrarily, I will tell you, he will let them move forward. If he doesn't, he won't. And hence, he slapped my wrist quite strongly when I moved a number of motions as a consequence of Christine Billings' motion on the sub-generator in Margaret Green Park, where I said, well, okay, now that we've got that on the books, I've got six motions on what we should be doing with our concerns with Metrolinx. I got three of them passed, which was great. Three of them did not pass. But what I really appreciated was I got on record the number of councillors who really did not want us to be dealing with Metrolinx at all. So if you can frame something that is nicely framed and for the love of the trees, whatever you want to call it, it might fly. But even if it doesn't fly, I think that's very important. If it doesn't fly, then you've got on record who doesn't support it.
Thank you.
One of the other things you might look at is the tree replacement policy. What we've had in the Mount Dennis area is for every tree cut, they are supposed to replace with three trees. So I understand there's a difference between the ones that they offer as replacement and the mature trees that they cut, but that there at least is some recognition that the trees are valuable. They're not just in the way.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Rick. And in my initial correspondence with one of your Mount Dennis colleagues, he had looked at the vegetation removal plan that I shared with him from Metrolinx, and he found it an interesting discrepancy that in the case of your neighborhood, Metrolinx had committed to 3 tree replacements for every 1 removed. And in this document, it was 1-to-1. So, you know, some of these issues, I think, need to be brought forward when we are approaching leadership. And I definitely like the idea of you know, getting folks from Hydro One and Metrolinx, and Lloyd Longfield on location to take a walk through. I think that would be valuable.
If it's okay, folks, there are just a couple of loose ends from the chat that I wanted to make sure are addressed. Morgan, you brought up an LPAT application from SkyDevCo. I was wondering if you could enlighten us on that.
Thanks, Dustin. So as I believe it was Phil brought up, the SkyDevCo phallic symbol on fountain at Wyndham Farquhar, as I was pretty sure they were going to do after their application came through with absolutely no changes, after all of the things that so many citizens had to say, and the fact that staff put forth the recommendation to not accept the application. I mean, there was there's nobody in the city other than the SkyDevCo developers that want this building there. It's not that we don't want the type of building that they're proposing, it's where it is. And because of the new provincial mandates that came down about building within certain distances of transportation hubs, there's a very good chance the SkyDevCo is going to get the LPAT board to say, yep, you can go ahead and build it. And that really concerns me, because you were talking about follow the money. So how much of a connection is there between the people of Skyline and the people that sit on the Metrolinx board? Like, these are the things that are really concerning to me about that particular project. It's not that I don't agree with having more affordable apartments in the downtown area. It's just that specific location with that height of building.
So Dustin, let me just speak to that one. Perhaps I'm paranoid on this one, but I think the inevitability of that building going up is assured. And it's not assured necessarily because, as Morgan says, there might be personal connections between Skyline or SkyDevCo and Metrolinx. It's assured because, and Rick, you might want to talk to this one, because of some changes at the cabinet level to development along commuter lines that are happening right now in Toronto. They are happening along LRT and subway lines that's intended on intensifying those corridors and providing what is referred to as affordable housing in a number of those developments. The Skyline development, despite the fact that it's not in an LRT or a subway line, does fit very, very well into that frame. It just happens to be on a GO line. And so I do believe that despite what we have done at City Council, there is a damn good chance that you're going to see that 25-story building being put there, regardless what council said. And that's a real concern. Morgan, just another comment. I actually am opposed to 25-story buildings. It's very clear that in terms of current planning principles that we don't need 25-story buildings, that we can effectively house people in buildings that are somewhere between about 6 and 8 stories. We can intensify, and we do not have the negative impact that those buildings will tend to display. So from my perspective, I'm not in favor of providing any bonusing or any support for anything beyond what is already in the current master plan for the city. This one is an atrocious blight. And as much as Skyline has done some very good work in Ward 3 with poverty associated issues, this one, I think they're taking advantage of the city, and I think we'll take advantage of principles of planning. Rick, do you have experience with that particular cabinet directive about development along commuter corridors?
The transit-oriented communities is the program, and it's first being connected through GO and now being brought into the LRT corridors. Recently, if you Google transit-oriented communities, Metrolinks, you'll see the Metrolinks page on it. It'll give you some background information, not enough to really dig your heels into, but at least it'll familiarize yourself, your group with what they're talking about when they use the words. The purpose again is to intensify around the backbone of transit and transportation, public transportation, as the region grows, to put people close to transportation. And the latest directive has been accelerated, I think, in terms of the need to move the economy. The development industry is a big driver for the economy. So right now, the Ford government is putting pressure to all of its ministries, if they have any surplus land to their needs, to get it onto the market. With Metrolinks, I think people who may know the situation that happened in Jane Finch, where we had negotiated as with the Clean Train Coalition had negotiated a frontage land for their maintenance and storage yards of the Finch LRT and Jane. That's located just a block away from the intersection of Jane and Finch.
Ran out of time again, that's all. Thanks as always to our guests and to the Breezy Breakfast team of Phil Alt, Dustin Brown, Tanya Gavert, Hina Mystery, Sequoia Kim, and our many supporters who gather every Thursday at the unkind hour of 8 a.m. Music for the Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour is by Jules Germ. If you'd like to join us in one of our live Zoom sessions or you have any questions, email me, James Gordon, at james@jamesgordon.ca. If you'd like to support the work that we do on this program, please visit patreon.com and look for Breezy Bullhorn. Thank you for any support you can lend, and as always, for listening.